Hi, I'm Liz.
And I'm Rhea.
Welcome to Karma's My Bitch, a podcast about love,
sex,
connection,
abundance,
joy,
purpose,
peace,
and how life isn't simply the stories we tell ourselves. Season 11.
I don't even remember season 10. I don't know how we got here.
I remember it because it was my favorite season. It was the season all about relationships and sex and cheating and gold digging and partnership and marriage. We didn't say the words divine or divine union. Oh, no, wait, we did because we spent a lot of time in my divine.
No, we did.
And in your divine. I really laughed a lot in that episode. Go on.
I'm just sorry that you had to slog through 9 seasons to get to a season you actually liked.
Well, you know, this is
I don't know what that says about you though, Rhea.
Okay, so I'm just going to ask, what is this season about? We've done the season on relationships. What if it never happened? What if karma never happened, but separation still exists? What is this season? Mm-hmm. What if separation doesn't exist?
So our previous season, which your favorite season, we covered, we started to kind of cover bliss, which is the B in our name, right?
Yeah.
So that was our final season about magic, which was really about, can you imagine a life, you know, creating a life where perhaps you still live in a world of separation, but you're not separate from yourself. What if karma never happened? So okay. You still had choice. You could still just live freely. And can you just kind of live and fuck up from that space and enjoy life? So this season is about finding your happy place, right? In the pursuit of happiness, what does life look like? To get to bliss, we really need to grasp happiness.
Is happiness the precursor to bliss?
There's a bit more to it than just happiness. And we'll sort of, that's what this season is about, sort of breaking it down. But we need to at least try to understand what it takes to get to our happy place before we can really imagine a life in bliss. But in this pursuit of happiness, we have to try to understand two fundamental things, right? One is, how do you define your happy, which will be different for everyone. And it's often purpose-based when it comes to happiness. So we'll kind of figure out what that is. And the second is, how to sustain that.
Yeah, because I think that's really, for me anyway, the big thing.
Yeah, I would think so. I think that is for everyone because I think people really do assume that happiness is fleeting.
Yes. Well, that's what we've discussed. And just a quick roundup, I guess, about happiness is that what we've discussed in previous episodes is that when we talk about the happiness idea, it's, you know, it's pleasure, it's a moment, it's, you know, preceded or followed by some kind of shit, right?
Right. So it's often fleeting.
Yeah. So the idea that it's always, like, that it's just a kind of stable thing within oneself mm-hmm. is not something that we know or can really even connect to. And that's right. What we've been trying to do for some of these seasons is talk about happiness and what that means, and also in some of our books and stuff as well. So this is the first season of Bliss Bliss, Big B. This is the B in our name. We are finally putting the third piece into the puzzle.
This will kickstart about 3 seasons on Bliss.
One of which is this one, which is 25 episodes.
Yes.
And the other 2 we don't know yet.
No. Please don't make me do more work.
I mean, I'm curious, will it be 40 episodes? And they're going to be like, and we have a bumper season. You never know. You never know with this stuff. All we can do, like what we said, is just keep going and figuring it out as we go along.
You just keep going and you just kind of run with it. And I don't know. Those bonus episodes, like we do. So an average season is 20. Anytime they tack on 5 episodes, there's some extra learning that ties things together. So we'll
and also
see
I'm always curious, and we never know which ones are the 5 bonus in a season, right? Okay. So in season 9 they're 25, and one would assume that the last 5 would be the bonus episodes. Often they're not. Often there's like 16 and 23, and it's not always the last 5. So
no, that's true. But we did in this one, somewhere in the last 5, it's actually episode 23, we do offer a process.
Oh, yes. Which is actually something I'm very excited about, because that was the other thing I wanted to ask. Mm-hmm. And maybe I don't get to ask it today, but I am going to try, which is, we just had a whole season on relationships, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And that was the bridge between magic and bliss. So how much of relationships factor into bliss?
None at all, because bliss is an internal thing, which is why these episodes aren't quite about relationships in the same way. Not to disappoint you, because we will touch upon it, just again, not in the way we did in that more practical, grounded way that we did in the previous season. Although I do promise you that not all of this season will be theoretical like other ones.
Okay, fine. But
although it might be.
Even though bliss is internal, Mm-hmm. Even though bliss is internal, I'm assuming that like anything, when it really, it's also relational, right? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Because I mean, I don't know. I know you said not at all, but in my head, I'm like, well, the last season was all about relationships leading up to bliss. So I'm pretty sure that there's going to be some kind of link there.
You're not wrong. There's more value in exploring how those come together versus trying to, again, sort of figure out the theory.
But I guess that's the point, right? You are unapologetically yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you'd say how you feel, you own it. A lot of people, when you just discuss spirituality, you discuss all this kind of stuff, people expect you to look a certain way, act a certain way, and be a certain way. Mm-hmm. And actually, both of us, we're not like that at all. Being truly spiritual and being truly acknowledging of your divinity, and I can't believe I'm the one who said that first in the season, is to be yourself. And for me, when I think about what does it mean to be unapologetically myself, it's I turn up as me in every situation. I am the unicorns and rainbows girl, but at the same time, I'm really grounded and I'm all the different things, and I allow myself to exist all of those at one time. And I feel like, you know, we've been socialized. I'm just going to keep going. I feel like we've been socialized to be palatable, right? We've been socialized to be like everyone else in every single way. And anything that involved being different meant you were wrong. You were bad. You were not okay. You know, that was why you were unhappy. It was like all the fault stuff. But actually, as I've come to go through my karmic undoing process, as I've come to embrace my magic, I've started realizing that the things that make me special and powerful are the things that are just wholly me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think to myself, conspiracy moment of the day, is no wonder everyone was forced to be like everyone else, because that made everyone powerless.
It's funny, because just this morning you and I were talking about how much we don't talk about what we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is really not great for us on the one hand in terms of like selling our podcast and books.
Fantastic. Fantastically good at that.
We are like amazing marketers.
Yeah.
But I do that in part because I also know that the moment people discover what I do, they immediately put me in a box.
I mean, I did when I first met you. I was like, yeah. Oh, she'll fix me.
I struggle with being seen as normal. And it's not that I want to be regarded as quote unquote normal. I also just never really wanted to be seen as so different that somebody couldn't or wouldn't think that they couldn't get along with me.
Mm.
And so, yes, I think I am definitely responsible for trying to make myself palatable. And perhaps there were selfish reasons. Again, I just didn't want to feel like I was so different from everyone else to the point where I felt isolated.
Mm.
You know, at the same time, I also just didn't know how to put it out there who I am either. So I think there was just, I was constantly teetering in this kind of back and forth of like owning who I was, not allowing what I do to define that, but to also not hide it.
Definitely happened to me where, you know, people have been so derisive about what I do. I remember some dude told me, well, I guess if we're meant to see each other again, you'll just manifest me. Ha ha ha. And I just looked at him and I was like, mate, I'm not manifesting shit if it comes to you. Like, I don't think I even believe in manifestation. Well, I know I don't. Chapter, whatever it is, read Karmic Attraction, you'll know why. The thing is that I found that the more I hid who I was, the more I lost touch with who I was,
yeah,
and the more I felt my power slip away.
Yes.
Because there's a difference between something being private and it being silenced.
Yes.
And I think when you talk about teetering on the edge, I think that's the edge that we all kind of teeter on, is that it's fine. I don't need to tell everyone what I do every day. I don't need to tell people what I believe. I don't need to impose any beliefs of my own onto anyone else. Mm-hmm. And if I offer not a version of myself, but if I offer certain parts of me out there, I'm not under obligation to offer all of me out there all the time. It's mine to choose what I share and what I don't. But at the same time, if I'm doing that whilst silencing who I am, then I'm telling myself it's not okay to be me.
Right.
And I'm also cutting off my power.
Yes.
And that's what ended up happening. You know, for me, when that happened to me, that, you know, I all of a sudden felt like everyone else, which was powerless, and I felt shit. And the unicorns ended up being wishes rather than my dreams and my realities and everything else.
Yeah, we end up undermining ourselves. And that is really the worst part about all of this. And I had gone through that process, not really telling anybody that I did. You know, I was Vivian Winslow, you know, like yeah. I have gone through many, many degrees of this kind of like, I am not that person, but I am so in this, I am not me, right?
Yeah.
And it's not even rejection of self. There's another way to look at it as opposed to self-rejection. It really has to do with morphing one's identity.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I was never wholly me at one time. It was just the kind of compartmentalization that I was used to doing, and I was just doing it in a different way. And it took going back to London, which is odd because I don't know if I ever spoke about it, but the first time I lived in London, which is when I first picked up my spiritual practice, the spiritual practice that I didn't think I was going to do till my 40s.
So your first kind of soul memory client was in London?
No, anyway. I didn't learn and practice soul memory until I lived in Hong Kong. So that was after London. Okay. But in London is when I started to pick it up, right? And so I was doing card readings and stuff like that and other healing work. And then I moved to Hong Kong. Then I picked up and then I expanded my practice. But London was the first place, right, in my adult life, right? I was newly married and stuff. And so it took, and then after that, I was kind of spotty. Like wherever I was living, I was either writing or I was doing this. I mean, it was mostly my day job, if you will, but it was also my part-time job because I was a full-time mom and like a full-time expat. So when it took moving back to London and meeting you that I picked up this practice full-time to the point where it became full-on. That in many ways, it did become my whole life.
Yes.
And thus, it really shifted my identity again. And it challenged me to really own the thing that I had shelved, which I had loved the most.
Yeah. Ditto.
You know, because I had always had the spiritual practice had always been with me for 20-something years. And I finally made it everything. In a way, it was a bit exhausting, but I could finally make room for it in a way that I never had before. So then my new challenge was, how can I still make it part of my life, but not it be my life?
That was always the most favorite part of my life. The favorite part of me was my heart, was the person who loves and did all this stuff. And I felt like that was a bit that I tried to drown out. And in doing this work and in meeting you and starting this, I felt that actually the one big thing I've learned is being that person is what makes me happy. So I guess when you're talking about what's your happy place? I think for me, my happy place is that. And yes, my identity has shifted. And yes, the rainbows and the unicorns have matured, right?
Yeah.
But they're still there. And yes, I was always quite spiritual to some degree or another. And again, that's matured, but it's still there. And I just find if anything, my gifts and everything else has expanded and become stronger and better. But it still brings me the same joy as it always did.
Yeah. But understanding what your purest self-expression is a challenge when we've grown up and been conditioned in the society to sort of define yourself by what you do, by your relationships, right? Like being back in the States, it's pretty immediate, like how quickly you're supposed to talk about what you do. And so the one thing that I've brought back with me to the States, you know, after all that time in London, was the new challenge of figuring out how to express myself purely and honestly, right? Being the most truthful expression of who I am without allowing it to be my full identity, if that makes sense. Okay, I am not what I do, even if it is, you know, even if I'm living my purpose can't define me. But at the same time, it's such a big part of who I am. How can I be the most truthful expression, if you will, and still be myself? So for
me, because it's true, it's not.
No, you are not what you do. And we're having to really beat that out of ourselves time and again.
Yeah.
So I'm actually, what I have been doing is deliberately, I wouldn't say consciously, because whatever, I'm trying not to use that word, but I'm deliberately putting myself into variety of social situations. You know, I'm not a super social person, not just because I'm somewhat introverted, just because like I'm socially awkward and I have enough going on in my head that sometimes being around people is a lot.
Mm.
As you know, but what I've done since I've moved here is given myself ample opportunity to be in as many social situations as possible that I can manage, and doing my utmost to actually not talk about what I do, in part so I can challenge myself to see if I can share part of who I am apart from that.
When I think about self-expression, I often think about people who are actually just expressing their pain.
Mm,
right?
Yes.
Who I am is a result of my victimization. Yes. I am the result of my experiences. I am, and you know, and we spoke about this before a lot, and we spoke about it in the books where we're like, when people say, I am a survivor, I am a mother, I am a sister, I am a spiritual person. I mean, I'm not just a label. I'm also the person who was single and then was in a relationship. I'm the person who got my act together and made millions. I'm the, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
We talk about what we've achieved in terms of where we started.
Exactly.
And in doing so, what we end up doing is we keep ourselves in the time of where we were rather than who we are. Yeah. And I'm not saying that who we were isn't important. In fact, actually, it's the opposite, because, you know, as we discussed in one of our books, we talk about letting it go and all that kind of stuff. We cannot just pretend that we weren't who we were and we didn't make the choices we did. And the key to all of that is compassion, as I said, and it's really important. And all the versions of me have existed are all versions of me. So to say that one version of me is better than another because, you know, she was one way and I'm now another way and I'm happier because of it, or to define my happiness from my pain, that doesn't work.
No, because it's
not
happiness.
That actually just keeps you alive.
Right. If we're kind of saying, you know, if our happiness is dependent upon where we were, as in my life is better now and therefore I am happier, that's actually not real happiness.
No, that's separation, because you're labeling still, right?
It's like relief. It's effectively, it's relief that we have couched as happiness.
Yeah.
But you're still, because you're in a space of comparison.
Yeah.
I am better than I was, which is not bad. We're not trying to say that
amazing,
at all.
Amazing. Fantastic.
I mean, better that than a life of pain, of course. Exactly. Yet you're still not quite there. And that's okay. It's not that you're not enough. But understanding that happiness is not a relative concept. And also, you know, so back in, you know, when I was in high school, I had been on that religious retreat. I'm sure I told the story where, you know.
By the way, I'm really laughing about how this season is like Liz's story season. Everyone's like, oh, we're finally learning about Liz. Okay, go on.
Well, I'm sure I shared the story. I brought margaritas on this like spiritual retreat when I was in high school and I got in big trouble for it. But anyway, I gave two talks. One was called Knowing Yourself. And the second one was, I can't even remember.
But were they punishments? That was what you had to do? Give talks?
No. The spiritual retreat was like a privilege. And to be able to talk at this and give a speech, I mean, it kind of felt like a real honor. Like, wow, I've come so far that, you know, I've been bestowed this great responsibility of sharing this big idea and my truth. And so, of course, mine was knowing yourself. And one of the concepts that I had to cover was, I am the sum total of my experiences. And at 17, I think it was, 17, 18, it was like, yeah, I am. Like, oh, come on, I was so young. One thing I've learned many years later and through this work is that we are not. To a degree, we are, but there's still so much about who we are that has nothing to do with our past experiences.
And actually, our past experiences have taught us to deny who we are, not be who we are. So I'd say if we are the subtotal of our experiences, you can't know who you are when you're in your karma and your fear and your ego, not truly, because you're defining yourself by other people. You're defining yourself externally to the internal, right? Yeah. It's shaping everything.
It really is. And you're not your pain. You know, I think...
No, because the pain is a result of separation. That's what I don't think we've said that for a while, but the pain is effectively, I can't be who I am, because if I am, I will be hurt. I will be in pain. So you can't be your pain, because if you are your pain, then you're also still separate from yourself, right? Yeah. It doesn't work. They don't work together.
And we try to show who we are often through our redemption arc, right? Like, I was this person and I went through this, but now I'm not you know, I survived this. I mean, a lot of us are really existing within these survivor identities more than anything else. Everything I've been through has brought me here.
And this is why I'm here. Mm-hmm. Honestly, everything I've been through tries to stop me from being here. I and who I am fought tooth and nail against everything I've been through to keep going, to pick myself back up, and to be who I am today. Everything I've been through didn't result in this.
Yeah.
And to say that it does gives more credence to the idea that love is pain, that we deserve to be hurt in order to grow, that we are merely here to be played with, and that life is hard.
Oh yeah, that it's all right? suffering.
Everything I've been through taught me those things. They didn't teach me the other stuff. I taught myself that by following my heart and for continuing to believe in love and rainbows and unicorns and joy and beautiful connections. So in some respects, I'm here despite what I've been through. And I'm still
I like
here.
That perspective. To me, it makes a lot more sense. Every time we see that or allow this, the hurdle that we overcame to be the constant struggle, even if it's past struggle, as you said, we keep it alive. You can never really let something go until you've fully healed it. But once it's healed, it is done. It's as if it's never existed. And it's not something you had to will away and ignore to the, until it got smaller and smaller and smaller. And you got older and older and older. So that way it's just a little dot in your memory or when you look back. It really just ceases to exist. Like poof.
And it doesn't have the emotional charge anymore.
No.
So like I can look at other people and see, oh, I've been there. I know what that feels like. But that's kind of the end of it.
Yeah.
And that's when I know I'm free from it. All right. Are you going to talk about the divines and all the divines? Or are we just going to miss out on the divines?
No, sadly, I'm going to have to say it. Because otherwise, there's like no point. We can't get into full circle without it.
Okay, go on. This is you divining and then going into full circle.
I know. I just struggling to get through this bit because I was like, why? You're just going to make fun of me and laugh at me again. But I'm going to own it, all right? If this episode is about pure self-expression and being unapologetically ourselves, I'm going to go for it, okay?
All right, let's go.
I got to do this. Okay, so earlier when I kind of talked about how in this move to New York and just kind of having – I didn't fully blank slate my life because I'm still doing this work. I still have a lot going on. But I am taking the challenge to sort of figure out who I am in a different way in a new place, right? And so, as I said, I'm putting myself into different social situations. And the one of the things I'm doing, not necessarily consciously, as in I'm going to sit there and plan it out because I'm not strategic or smart like you, is I'm going to see how much can I talk about that has nothing to do with what I do, right? How many labels can I avoid? And so how do I share myself without making about everything I do is really the question. Can I share a thought or an idea that maybe makes me a little uncomfortable to share because I don't know how somebody's going to react, but at the same time is like really genuinely me?
Okay.
Yeah. And that's not that easy because we really have grown up in a world or we've been socialized in a world where we are what we do. And you and I have talked about purpose and how purpose is just the thing that really brings you joy, right? The thing that we devote ourselves to and who we are. And that point, and it is not our self-expression, but it is one of the ways in which we fully express ourselves. And so that's why our purpose is the embodiment of our most divine self. Effectively, if we can't really say who we are, if like you said, if everything is an expression of our ego self, right? And trying to prove and validate ourselves and our worth to everyone else by trying to be cool enough or smart enough, you know, being the smartest person in the room or the coolest person in the room. What we're doing is having to really understand how much of our self-expression is expressing our most divine self, right? Because our most divine self is who we really are at our core. And that is the one truth, yeah? That everything and all things are an expression of the divine because we are the divine. But effectively, what we're coming to is we're seeking redemption. Now, I'm not saying redemption in the old way of like our survival story, but it's redemption, which is taking all of that divine self and all of that power, that part of us that we've denied, which you had spoken about, right? Like if I am my survival story, if I am my victimization story, then what I am is I'm powerless. Or what little bit of power I have in overcoming that is what defines who I am. Everything I do and say and express is from that place of pain. So when we're what we're looking toward as we come into actually 2027, I can't believe I have to project that far out, is when our redemption arcs begin. Yeah. So unfortunately, we can't come into it sooner, which I think is pretty obvious right now at the time of this recording. Why? Effectively, when we're coming into this redemption arc, and which is effectively coming into our most divine self, is we're coming into the most open-hearted and humble space. Oh, and by the way, even though I'm saying 2027, there are some who will be able to begin this bit around 2025.
First question. Mm-hmm. What is a redemption arc?
So a redemption arc in storytelling is when the hero on their path, like for whatever reason, is effectively they made their mistakes, they hurt others, et cetera, but they've somehow by the end have become a better person.
And all their lives just kind of start slotting into place.
And then everybody loves them or they've proven themselves worthy again, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's the loosest definition I can offer. It's simplest, but there you go. That is your redemption arc.
And how long does a redemption arc take in this context?
Several months. What this redemption arc looks like, right, is effectively being on the same page or having the same goal, which is really just to stop being assholes and just start having compassion for our fellow divine souls. That's it.
Oh, yes, yes. And that's not very easy.
No.
And that is uncomfortable because you have to also just really see like how you play into stuff. And what actually can be quite interesting about that is you find yourself responding to stuff very differently than you used to.
Yeah.
So whereas before someone would come at you and you'd come back at them, you start seeing it all very differently. So you kind of your relationships become more harmonious because you're mm-hmm. more harmonious.
Oh, absolutely. But it's not an easy time to do this, which is why people need. That's why even though it's 2024 and I'm saying 2027, you can only imagine how much separation has taken hold.
Yeah.
Of the hearts and minds of many people, that this might seem a bit challenging. And mind you, there are plenty of...
You can't see yourself and everyone else, yeah.
No. And it's not... And even if you can't see yourself in other people, can you at least hold space for where they are at? Can you at least just understand their pain and their viewpoint, even if you don't agree with it?
Yeah.
And that is really not easy. And mind you, there are going to be a lot of people here who are still committed to separation and upholding the tenets of separation. And so they're going to really side with that. And that can feel really difficult for people who are seeking to get to this redemption arc.
Mm.
Yeah.
So can everyone get to this redemption arc? And will everyone get there by 2027?
Enough of us do. It will make a much more harmonious transition globally toward oneness. But that's really not going to be simple. And that's a really difficult thing to project, even now in 2024.
Yeah, no, but it makes sense because actually there's one thing to go through your karma, follow your heart and realize that you are the one that can get yourself out of whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And create the life that you want. It's another thing to then learn that actually you can... By following that heart, by following your gut, by trusting, you know, hope, faith, knowing all of that and allowing everything to unfold, following your fate, as you would say, you can start to see your life really, really change.
Yeah.
But it's still easy to get bogged down with everything that's going on around us and the pain and the fear. And you can start finding yourself take sides. Can start finding yourself being aggressive and then you're just adding more to the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit like when we were talking about label. Can you talk about the past and what you've overcome? I guess it's the same on a bigger scale as well, because the more we talk about our old labels, the more we put ourselves up against each other, the more we try not to see that actually we're all just humans,
mm-hmm.
the more we're going to miss the point and the more we won't get to oneness. We'll just be kind of pseudo-onenessing while being like, well, I'm very spiritual, but I still want these people destroyed, or I'm very spiritual, but that's bad and wrong. And the fact of the matter is, unless we're able to see that everyone is coming from somewhere
mm-hmm.
and everyone is doing their best and everyone ultimately wants to be happy, even if their happiness doesn't look like your happiness, they're still trying, then we're just going to keep creating walls for each other to come up against. Yeah. The more we do it, the less we'll get anywhere.
Because we'll keep bringing the past into the present, which means the future is constantly defined by our old hurts. And the more we carry those old hurts, the more we're just going to keep living and reliving the same loop.
Yeah.
And we will not get to a point where we can really create a new world. We're just layering on top of a crumbly foundation.
Which already never suited us, otherwise we wouldn't have needed the new world in the first place.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. For more information, articles, and inspiration, find us at karmasmybitch.com and at karmasmybitch.insta.
And if you liked what you heard, please subscribe and leave us a review.